if you want to be the best, if you want to be really good at it, you're going to have to put in the work and the time. And similar to being a good athlete and a, you know, and a good player, if you want to be a good coach, you got to watch the film. You have to, you know, prepare your notes. You have to prepare and be ready. And I think if you want to be successful, you have to set yourself up, you know, for that success. And it doesn't come with, you know, with talk. You have to do it.
Welcome to the Building Excellence Podcast. I'm your host, Bailey Miles. The Building Excellence Podcast is all about sharing inspiring stories from some of the most successful athletes, coaches, business minds, and thought leaders to help you build excellence in your life, leadership, and legacy. To learn more, visit baileymiles.com and be sure to rate, review, and follow us on all social media platforms. Now let's get to the show and start building excellence in your life, leadership, and legacy. Charles O'Bannon is a former professional basketball player. He was drafted by the Detroit Pistons in the 1997 NBA draft. Chuck grew up in Compton, California and went to high school at the basketball powerhouse Artesia. While at Artesia High, he was a three-time state champion and All-American. He then went to UCLA where he was able to play with his brother and win the 1995 NCAA National Championship. After getting drafted and spending a few seasons in the NBA with the Pistons, Chuck then went on to play professionally and win championships in Japan, Poland, and Italy. Chuck has won championships everywhere he has been, from high school to college and professionally. On the show, he shares his story, the influence and support of his parents and family, the power of competition and hard work, playing professionally, building the discipline of a championship work ethic, mindset, culture, and much more. Enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the Building Excellence Podcast. Today I have a special guest, Chuck O'Bannon. Thanks for being here, Chuck.
Hey, appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, if you wouldn't mind, give our listeners some context to you and some background of what life was like growing up for you.
I grew up in Compton, California, it was a wonderful experience for me. Both my parents were adamant about family, and I had an older brother, have an older brother. Okay. And it was a comfortable life growing up, surrounded by just love and family. You know, basketball is a huge part of my life. Actually, all sports were. Whatever season it was, that's what my dad had us playing. You know, baseball season come around and I'm playing first base, and football comes around, I want to be a wide receiver, and you know, and basketball. You know, we wanted to be Magic Johnson and, yeah, you know, James Worthy. So, you know, growing up in California, those were kind of our influences.
Oh, definitely. Now, what other sports? I mean, you talked about baseball. Did your dad play sports? And was that something that he did as well?
Yeah, my dad actually played football. He played football at UCLA. And blue and gold has always been a part of our lives, you know, growing up, you know, being UCLA Bruin fans. But my dad pushed us away from football, actually, because he didn't want us to get hurt. You know, he had a few injuries, you know, coming through, and you know, having that foresight, he didn't want us, you know, getting injured. My mom is 6 foot tall and my dad is 6 foot five. Okay. So he expected us to be, you know, 6'9", 6'10", you know, 7 footers, you know. So he was like, you know, there's no way you guys are playing football and, you know, getting these kind of injuries. So, yeah, he kind of steered us away from that.
Yeah. Well, how important were your parents growing up? And as you look back, maybe what are some things that you really admire and respect about them now that you've been a father as well?
Well, I mean, just the dedication that they showed me, you know, growing up, being around all the time, taking me to all the practices, taking me to all the games, and supporting me through everything. You know, that's always been a big part of our lives. You know, I don't know anything different. You know, thankfully, you know, that, you know, they've always been, you know, been a staple in my life. You know, so. That's one thing I can take from them is that, you know, you can, they're always around, you know, and I think that's necessary for your kids.
Yeah. Now, were they someone who always kind of imparted belief in you and just obviously the support was there, but was there the ability to continue to help you work hard at what you're doing to support you, but also to help you get to the next level by just being around you and supporting you?
Supporting us and pushing us as well. You know, they didn't tell us, you know, they didn't sugarcoat anything. You know, it wasn't always, you know, you're the best at this. You're, you know, you're great at this. You know, it was, you know, you have to push yourself. You have to work hard. You have to, you know, you have to do better. You know, if we, you know, if something went wrong, then they'd question it. And they'd ask us our opinion on, you know, how can we improve that? How can we make things better? You know, so, you know, I thought that was, you know, at the time, you know, of course you want to hear all the good and the positive, but, you know, they challenged us. And I think that was one of the bigger things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's really important, especially for kids growing up, having parents that obviously support you, mm-hmm. but push you to be better and to get better each day. But at the same time, I love what you just talked about. They would ask you questions, right. And they would make you think about that. They'd make you think about whatever they were asking. And so I think that's powerful, is being able to think for yourself and think about things by asking really good questions really helps you grow. And so that's something, obviously, you just touched on, your parents did for you. So mm-hmm. I'm sure that was very impactful at a young age for you growing up, to have that support, but also have that ability to have parents that ask questions that challenged you and pushed you to get better each day. So obviously yeah. you touched on definitely playing sports. Mm-hmm. When did you decide to just kind of focus in on basketball? Because I was listening and I think you really liked a lot of different sports. And so, yeah. but eventually you decided to kind of stay in the lane of basketball. Why did you do that? And was that a tough decision to make?
It was a tough decision. Actually, my favorite sport, and it still is baseball.
Baseball. Okay.
Yeah. I don't want to, you know, toot my own, you know, horn over here, but I could hit a baseball. And, you know, I have a good judge of, you know, a curveball, and, you know, that was never a problem hitting that. Mm-hmm. But growing up, I was in eighth grade, and my brother was already having success at basketball. And I had to make a choice. Well, my high school coach at the time, his name is Wayne Marino at Artesia High School. He said, you know, if you want to be the best at this sport, then you need to give it, you know, 365, you know, you need to go all in. And I didn't care for that too much. You know, I wanted to play some baseball, but I also saw Ed's success and was like, you know what? I want that right there. You know, I want to do what he's doing. I want to achieve what he's achieving and, you know, get those same accolades. And, you know, so that was tough. So it was around eighth grade that I stopped playing baseball and dedicated, you know, my entire life to basketball and trying to get better. Yeah.
Now, what position were you in baseball?
I was first base and pitcher.
And pitcher too.
Because I'm a lefty, I couldn't do anything else in the infield.
Okay.
You know? So yeah, first base, and then I was usually all the tallest on the team. You know, so I could stretch and. You know, scoop balls pretty well, and you know, I was, oh man,
we don't want to have to make you relive that choice,
right? You're getting me started, yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, my
goodness. Yeah. Well, obviously, you decided to play basketball, and you talked about your older brother. Was that something? Obviously, competition, being around your brother, was he a good example for you growing up? And what was that like to be a younger brother, to have an older brother who was really good at basketball, even at a younger age? Because he was just a couple of years above you. Is that correct?
2 years older. Well, yeah. 2.5 years older, and but also 3 grades older, though. So it was a great example. You know, I got to see his, you know, his accomplishments and shoot for those. I see his failures and try and avoid those, you know. But the competition at home was by far the best thing possible. Yeah. You know? He wouldn't let me win anything. You know, he was that older brother who was like, you know, if you're going to beat me, you're going to earn this one. You know? But one thing I did love is he would treat me, you know, like a little brother and really hard on me when it was one-on-one. But whenever we'd go against anyone else, we were teammates, and we were, that's another thing my dad wouldn't let happen is, you protect your little brother at all costs, you know? And so we would, you know, we would play the neighborhood kids and we would never be on opposite teams. We'd always be together, you know, and we would, you know, we'd go after, you know, the best in the neighborhood and the best in the school. And, you know, we would always, you know, have that O'Bannon Bannon teamwork and teamship. So it was great.
Yeah. That's awesome. And to have someone that's older, but also to push you and to be competitive growing up, you know, it definitely favors the ability to play sports together. And so you guys got to do that in high school and you played on some great high school teams. What was that like stepping into from eighth grade, focusing on basketball, stepping into and making the varsity team your freshman year? What was that like in playing with your brother?
It was a lot of pressure, but at the time I was young and dumb. So, you know, it was a little bit of pressure, but it was just going out, having fun and doing what I love doing. You know, my freshman year, I wasn't a starter up until around Christmas vacation.
Was that?
The guy who was playing in front of me went on Christmas vacation with his family instead of being with the team. And, you know, once he went, I took over his spot and he never got it back.
The rest is history.
Yeah. And we ended up winning a state championship. It was the first for our high school at the time. So we won a state championship together. He was a senior. I was a freshman. And it was an amazing experience. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Well, what did that look like setting the tone, being a freshman? Obviously talked about taking that guy's spot after going on vacation. Being ready for opportunity is something that's really important, and I'm sure we'll touch on. But also seeing what it's like and what it takes to win a state championship as a freshman. And then obviously you did it, you know, you kind of set the bar because you continue to win state championships. But what did you learn as a freshman in high school through that experience? And how did that, you know, maybe help you or shape you, if it did at all in any way throughout your high school experience?
Well, hard work, you know, because we used to train all the time. One thing that I think our coach was a little ahead of his time was the individual training. You see it now with all the trainers and all the, you know, the videos and whatnot of kids, you know, trying to get better. But back then it wasn't that popular. And he was putting us in positions where for success, basically. He provided coaches for us that would come in, work us out, train us, and help us improve. And I think at that young age, instilling that work ethic and all that hard work and to be successful, I think that played a major role for me.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And hard work obviously is a must and a prerequisite for success in anything. So being able to have that, and you touched on that was all stuff I'm sure you put in after just the regular practice periods. It's like putting in the work after.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We'd have our team practice, you know, two and a half hours. And then we'd take a break and then we'd come back but not everyone on the team was fortunate enough to have those workouts. You know, he would pull aside, you know, a handful of kids and, you know, we would work out, you know, after that practice. So it was a blessing. It was a blessing for sure. I'd have to say, Tim Gurkovich, he was a UNLV assistant coach during that time when UNLV was with Jerry Tarkanian and you know, Larry Johnson, Stacey Augman during that time, and they won the championship in 1990. Well, when he was recruiting my brother, he would come down to Southern California and train us and work us out. So I was fortunate enough to work out with the best at the time, you know. So it was by far and away, you know, and it was advantageous for us.
Absolutely. And how many state championships did you win after your freshman year? Was it two or three?
We ended up winning three total for me.
Three total. That's right. Yeah. Okay.
My sophomore year, we got to the state semis and didn't play well. And we ended up losing. And but the next 2 years, my junior and senior year, we ended up winning state.
Yeah, I'd say you finished strong. So,
We did finish strong. Yes, we did.
yeah, obviously you had some great teams. And then you decided to go play college. What was the recruiting process like for you? And also another perspective is you got to watch your brother. You said he went to UNLV, correct? What was
Yes.
it like for you to go through the recruiting experience, and how did you wind up at UCLA?
Well, the recruiting experience was great for me. When I was a freshman and my brother was being recruited, I sat in all the home visits. I was sitting there taking notes. I was a little brother who was just hanging around, listening to everything. George Raveling from USC would come to the house and, speak and I'm taking notes and Coach Jim Herrick for UCLA will come in. Tarkanian came in for UNLV, Bill Frieder, Arizona State. So I had that experience as a young kid seeing these great coaches coming into the house. So it wasn't new for me when it was my turn to be recruited. I have to say when my brother he signed with UNLV, and because they got put on probation, they allowed him to get out of his letter of intent. So that's when he transferred to UCLA. So he never suited up for UNLV, transferred to UCLA, and was playing there for 3 years before I got there. And so when I was being recruited, of course, our background at being at my brother at home, and I want to play with him for the rest of my whole life. I've wanted to play with him. I knew I was going to UCLA. 1,000%, I was going to UCLA. I'm playing with my brother, but I wanted to get involved in the recruiting process. I wanted to experience going on visits, being recruited, and just the whole part of it. So luckily, I was fortunate enough. I was playing well, and all the top schools did recruit me. Rick Pitino, who was at Kentucky, he actually spoke at my high school banquet, our high school basketball banquet. He came in and gave a nice little speech, and so I was recruited by everyone. Michigan was one of my final schools. When I went on a visit there, I was with Juwan Howard and the Fab Five, Jalen Rose, Chris Webber, so it was mind blowing,
Yeah, you got a good experience on the recruiting experience, I'm sure.
amazing experience, I was thinking, every time I'd leave that school, I'd come home from a recruiting trip and my parents were like, just calm down, calm down. I was like, go there. I want to play with Juwan. I want to play with Jalen. He was like, calm down, calm down. At the end of the day, I wanted to play with my brother. And Lorenzo Romar, who coaches at Pepperdine now, he was the main recruiter for me at UCLA. And I
Was he
remember,
really? Okay.
yeah, I remember calling him at probably midnight, 1 in the morning. Kind of messing around, coach. I want to thank you for recruiting me. Pleasure. Kind of busting
Tee
his.
him up a little bit,
I had to. We had a great relationship. We still do. And at the end of the conversation, I was like, coach, I'm coming. Let's do this. Let's win us a championship. We were all excited about it. And yeah, and that's how I got to UCLA.
Yeah, that's a great story and great perspective because you were a McDonald's All-American. You were one of the top players in the country, so you had a lot of great options. And so I think the willingness, even though you knew you wanted to play with your brother, to be open to experience new things and to go try and see what other places are like, meet new people. I mean, you might have already known that, but just being willing to be able to do that. And I know it was probably a lot of fun too. So it's a win-win, right?
It's a total win-win. Yeah, for sure.
So, but obviously
But
getting to land at
valuable
UCLA.
experiences. Yeah, invaluable experiences and building relationships and with those guys, I still know them to this day. So, it was definitely, beneficial.
Absolutely. Well, what was it like, from the transition from playing Artesia where you had great success to go to UCLA? Was the pace different? Was the academic challenge a little bit different, or what were some of the biggest differences for you as you stepped into college?
Well, I'd say the academics probably was the biggest change. As you know, of course, in high school you're in school all day. Well, obviously, college you have class Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or Tuesday, Thursday. So it's about time management, and what are you going to do with it? Are you going to you waste your time? You're going to be studying. You're going to put all your efforts and your time into athletics. We're fortunate that we have group studies, team studies after practices, so we can get our academics. We had tutors nece if necessary, but I also prided myself in my academics. I attended all my classes. I took the notes. I took my did well on my tests. So it was school came pretty easy for me. I know a lot of athletes struggle with the academic part of it, but for me, it was that wasn't never was an issue for me. So I was able to put a lot of my time and effort into my craft, which is basketball, and try and improve. I was fortunate enough to play on some really good UCLA basketball teams.
Oh, yeah.
All 4 years we won at the time Pac-10. We won the Pac-10 championship for all 4 years, the basketball part of it was amazing for us.
Yeah.
So, that was pretty easy.
Yeah. Well, I think you touched on a really important point of time management. So no matter what it is, you're obviously playing basketball, but you're going to school at UCLA. So juggling that. Because basketball, when you're in college, and even in high school at some point, it becomes a lot of time and work. Like it is a little bit of a job, right? So being able to manage and have expectations up front and the discipline to make sure you're focused on your studies, and then obviously the discipline to work hard and put in the extra effort off the court too, is really important. And that's a challenge for a lot of people. It's a challenge for people that don't even play sports.
Sure.
So having that intact was probably, I'm sure, very important. What was it like for you from maybe a player perspective? Because I know now you're a coach, but what did you
Yes.
learn from Coach Herrick? I mean, because if we were to go down the list of some of the coaches that you had at UCLA, fantastic coaches. Coach Romar is probably one of my favorite coaches in college basketball. Just not just because of the way he's a coach, but I've been around him just a little bit, and the type of person that he is
Yes.
hands down, he's one of the best. So, what were some of the things you learned from those guys that really shaped you as you look back now?
Well, to put in, you're only going to be as good as the work that you put in, and the first couple of years it felt like, well, yeah, looking back, first couple of years I didn't put in the work that I should have put in. It was I letting my athletic skill, letting my talents just I was better than some of those guys. So,
Sure.
it came easy to me, but my junior year, after we won the championship, you could see that, things started to fall off a little bit. I didn't have, I wanted to be a professional. I wanted to get to the NBA, but some of my peers were leaving school and going to the league. And I was still in college, so Coach Romar, Mark Gottfried, who was coaching at NC State and most recently at Northridge, they instilled that, I got to put in the work during the off season. I can't put in, I can't just do, what was required of us. So that was eye-opening. And it was, instead of just living off my talents, I gotta put in that work. And that helped me my junior and senior year for sure.
Yeah. What was it like? You say your sophomore year is when you won the national championship?
Yes.
And you were playing with your brother too, if I remember correct.
Yes.
So talk a little bit about that experience and how probably amazing that was to be able to play with your brother, because you wanted to play with him in college, to win a
Right.
national championship at UCLA, which is where your dad went to school as well.
Right.
close to home. I mean, that's, I don't know if it gets much more storybook than that. So.
Okay. Yeah. Well, unfortunately, my brother's freshman year, after he left UNLV and signed with UCLA, he tore his ACL. So, blessing in disguise, after he tore his ACL, he had to sit out a year. So he redshirted that year. So by him redshirting, that instead of a 3-year gap, it was a 2-year gap. And so my sophomore year, he was a senior. He was a 5th-year senior. And so that allowed us the opportunity to play together. And that was the most amazing year. Have to be one of the best years, obviously, of my life. Having a son, of course, is one of the highlights of my life, but winning a championship in college was absolutely amazing, and for my parents, my grandparents to come to every single game, road and home and road, playing in front of them and building that camaraderie with that group of guys was by far and away my best basketball experience that I've ever achieved and have ever been a part of. It was amazing, having that run. Obviously, the tournament, we had a game, our my it was second round versus Missouri, and we were down the entire game. And actually down 1 point with 4.8 seconds to go. And Tyus Edney, which has become pretty famous, dribbled up the court, full court, 4.8 seconds, scored, we win by one. And we celebrate, go crazy. And at the time, I think we had a 19 game win streak. We were plowing through the season. We were, won the Pac-10, beating everybody. So, that would have been an obvious major upset.
Yeah.
And once we got in the locker room, we knew that we were going to win the championship. This was after the second round, because we felt that was that was that hard game that all champions experience in the tournament. And if you win that one, then that gets you over the edge. And we felt super confident after that, and went on to roll everybody else and win the whole thing,
Yeah, because did you play Oklahoma State in the Final Four? Is that right? Or were they in the
We
final? Yeah.
did. We played Oklahoma State in the Final Four and then Arkansas to win it all.
That's right. Which they had just won before. Is that correct?
Yeah,
Or.
they were the 94 champions, and so they were trying to repeat, and for us to do it one time, I can't imagine them doing it 2 years straight to get to the final. That's mind blowing,
Yeah, well, you had to tell them no, so.
Exactly. Credit to them, but yeah, we stopped them at the end.
Yeah, well,
Yeah.
what was it like in terms of the culture? Because when we talk about like championship culture and championship teams, were you guys pretty united together as a team?
We were. It's hard to explain how strong we were. We were all brothers, because the previous year we lost to Tulsa in the first round of the tournament.
Okay.
So from that day forward, after we lost and came back, it was all building towards this championship. So our off-season workouts, preseason workouts, during the season, we were one. And those guys are my brothers to this day, it was such a camaraderie that it's we weren't being broke, so
Absolutely.
it was really strong.
Well, I think that's an important point to touch on because, obviously as a coach now, it's like how do you develop and create buy-in and culture and how do you create the camaraderie that you talked about? Because when you talk to anyone, most people that have achieved significance or success at a high level with a team, they think back on those experiences and you can't really describe it like you're talking about. It's that
Yeah.
camaraderie.
Right.
And so that's a really interesting thing to try to dive into and learn about and try to figure out how you can do that as a coach or as a business leader within your own teams. So I think that's really important. But you obviously, you won the championship in 95, which is incredible with your brother. What was the next season like? And I think I remember, was the first game of the season, did you guys wind up losing?
We did. It was in the Maui Classic against Santa Clara and Steve Nash.
Steve Nash, okay.
Nash, yeah. And obviously he's in college pre-Steve Nash, the super pro, the two-time MVP that he turned out to be. But he was a cold guy, he led his team, he was a stud. And we had that young confidence that that we can't be beat. But the difference between that team, my junior year, and my sophomore year is we had leadership my sophomore year with Ed, Tyus, Edney, and George Zedek. They were our seniors. And so we had three seniors, and then we had a nice core group of young guys. So we had the energetic young guys, the leaders on the court, and it made for a perfect dynamic. So the following year, 96, my junior year, we didn't have that senior leadership. Now it was just a bunch of young guys trying to figure things out, and all of us wanting to be that guy. We all had aspirations of going to the NBA, and we all wanted we wanted to be the Ed O'Bannon of the UCLA now. So we were kind of competing against ourselves, one game I'd be, leading scorer. Next game, maybe Toby Bailey or Chris Johnson or Cameron Dollar. So it was a battle within ourselves, trying to see who's gonna be the leader. And until we accepted our roles, we weren't gonna be successful. And once we did that later in the year, then we started to have success.
Absolutely. And leadership is super important, and having effective leadership through upperclassmen, even younger classmen, lower classmen too, is really important. But understanding your roles, like you touched on, when teams understand individually their roles collectively as a team, it helps unite and allow teams to be successful. So I think that's a really, really good point that you just made. Well, obviously, you touched on later in your career, you realized that, hey, I need to put in some more work, and you did. And you wound up having a chance to have your name called in the NBA draft. What was that like? And talk a little bit about your experience of getting drafted and then obviously going to the NBA.
Well, it was my senior year was a up and down year. Started off slow, and I think we were playing. It was the middle of the Pac-10. We were playing Cal at Cal. And I believe I had like 15 points and 15 rebounds. It was the most rebounds I ever had, in college at the time. And it was kind of eye-opening. It was, I can do other things, besides just trying to score, And I think at that point, the team kind of built around me. They kind of accepted me as this is your senior year. We're gonna ride with you, Chuck. And and from then on, things went really good. I started to start playing well, start feeling more confident, and finished having a really good year. And season ended. We got to the Elite Eight, ended up losing to Minnesota. But after that season, I went to all the draft camps. Went to all the went to probably about 10 different teams workouts, and they called you in for personal workouts. And with Detroit Pistons, at that workout in particularly, I had an amazing workout. I think I was 23 for 25 from the 3-point line, in drills and stuff. And it was just one of those just mind-blowing workouts. I left that facility like, yeah, this is it. This is where I'm gonna be for sure. Well, fast forward to the draft, and I believe they had the 17th pick in the first round. I'm not sure on that, not exactly sure, but it was somewhere in the teens, late teens. And, I'm sitting with the family, of course, got a house full of people. And, so I'm, the pre-draft, they're projecting me late first round, maybe second, but likely first round. And so the draft is going on, and next up is Detroit's pick. And, I'm thinking, this is it. This is it. Here's my chance. Here's my time. And they ended up drafting Scott Pollard from Kansas. And you don't understand the devastation that went through me.
Oh, yeah.
I was crushed. But then there was a few other teams picking later in the first round that that I did have good workouts in, that they did call me in, and I was like, there's a chance, that I can get, I can hear my name. And the draft went through, each pick went across the board, and I didn't hear my name called. And when the first round ended, I left my family. Everybody's in the front room, the big room. I left and went to another room and cried my eyes out. It was absolutely devastating for me. And on draft night, which is supposed to be one of the best nights of your life, I'm in a small room,
Yeah.
boohooing, So my dad comes in, and he hugs me, and we have a conversation, and he says, get back out there, and you got family here. Everything's gonna be fine. You work too hard, and everything will be just, things will work out for you.
Sure.
Go back out, and I believe Detroit had the third pick in the second round, and then they called my name. Right before they pick, I get a call on the house phone,
Okay.
and
You don't have to say that. We don't need to date you that much. So, yeah.
I get a call. And Detroit says that they're going to pick me. And those tears automatically went to a smile, and happy. They became happy tears. So my dream came true, getting picked by Detroit, and in the second round, third pick of the second round. And so it was an absolute blessing,
Yeah.
So
Yeah, well, and you can tell us about it and you can be smiling now, but it wasn't so funny at the time, right?
not at all.
But you were able to get drafted and go to Detroit, who had tremendous success from a team standpoint. What was it like going there, and then talk a little bit about your professional career?
It was great going there. Rick Mahorn and Joe Dumars were two of the bad boys that were still on the team. They were at the end of their careers. But Rick Mahorn took me under his wing, and I became his rookie. I lived down the street from him in Detroit, or in Troy, Michigan. And, so it was a good experience. Jerome Williams, who played at Georgetown, and later in the NBA for a few other teams. He was a year before me, but he took me under his wing as well, showed me the ropes. And, it was a great experience for me. Unfortunately, only as a second rounder, I signed a 2-year contract. And so my second year was a lockout year. It was a 99, where instead of an 82 game season, we had maybe a 40 game season. So in my contract year, there weren't very many games, and I wasn't able to get on the court and prove myself so much, so much. So that was kind of disappointing. After my second year in Detroit, I was a free agent. And that off season, I tried out with Portland. Portland called me in a camp, and right before the season, and I'm trying to make their team. And at that time, Portland was, they were, that was the year they played the Lakers in the Western Conference semis with Shaq and Kobe. And Portland was one of the best teams in the NBA. So trying to make that team was pretty tough. It was tough trying to make that team. They actually signed Stacey Augmon right before the season, and when they signed Stacey, that knocked me off the roster. So that was actually the first team that I've ever been cut from in my entire life.
Wow.
Yeah, and high school, college, AUs, anything. And so that was a humbling experience, to say the least. So going from Portland, I went to Poland. My
Portland to
agent,
Poland, yeah.
Portland to Poland, there you go. My agent said there's an opportunity in Poland, or do you want to go to the D League, which is now the G League? And I had just had a son, and so I was thinking, if I go to the D League, which isn't very much money, or I could go overseas and make more money and now support my new family. That decision was easy. So I went to Poland my first year outside the NBA.
Yeah. And what was that like? Because you got to play at a lot of different places overseas. And
Yes.
talk a little bit about the experience, because I actually was just over, we were over in Spain, and we went to a FC Barcelona game. So I
Nice.
wanted to see it. So,
Oh,
and it
yeah,
is a fantastic atmosphere. And I've heard plenty of
for
people talk about playing over there, and it's amazing. But
sure.
man, they stock in, they pile in the gyms. It's loud. It's a great
Yeah.
atmosphere, but also experiencing different cultures. What was that like for you, and what are some of the funnest places you've got to go play in?
Well, Poland was my first experience, and it was amazing. I actually still have Facebook friends right now that some of my former teammates in Poland. We were fortunate enough to win a Polish championship. So my first time overseas, we won a Polish championship and helped them get to the EuroLeague. It was a great experience right away. The European fan base is similar to what you were just saying. They support their teams like no other. They live and die by their colors, and to be a part of that, to witness that was a lot of fun. So we won to win the Polish championship, and they offered me a contract and to play again for in the EuroLeague, and but I actually declined that, thinking, maybe I'm gonna give the NBA another shot. Then I go to the summer league, and I'm playing with the Clippers, and while I'm playing with the Clippers, my agent calls and says Japan is calling, and they want to offer you a contract, and for X amount of dollars. And I was thinking, well, I can go to Japan, and make this money with these bonuses, would be, and tax free, would be more than I would be making an NBA probably next year, and it's not guaranteed that I would make the team. So I was like, let's go ahead and get this contract, so I ended up signing with Japan, Toyota, which is in Tokyo. And so my second year overseas was in Japan, and that was an amazing experience as well. And what's crazy is I was in Japan for 13 years. So from that experience, I ended up being in Japan, the 12 years after that. But the thing is, with overseas, you play each year for a contract. You don't get a 2-year deal. You don't get a 5-year deal. So each year you're playing for a contract. So for me to play for 13 years, in one country means I have to bring it every single year, So that was tough, but that just shows, how hard I was working and how hard I was, trying to make those teams.
Absolutely. And you don't hear many people that play overseas at one spot for that many years. And like you touched on, every year is up for contract, right? For each
Yeah.
year. So there was definitely a lot of hard work you put in. And
Pressure.
one of the things I was just thinking of when you're talking about going to Poland, you want a championship. There's a common pattern. If you want a championship, just have Chuck.
And what's funny is during that our Japanese season ends a little early. At the time, it was ending around March, so that gave me an opportunity to go to other teams in other countries. And one off season, I went and played with my UCLA teammate Tyus Edney. We played in Italy. Played in Benetton and played for Benetton in Treviso. So I joined with Tyus, my college teammate, and we won an Italian championship.
And
So
Italian too.
yeah, so I've won Italian championship, won a Polish championship, and several Japanese championships. So I've been blessed. I've been fortunate enough to be on some really, really good teams.
Absolutely. Well, what was it like for you? Because, you're playing for a long period of time and then to transition and decide to step away from playing. How tough of a decision was that? And what were you thinking of? And what were the factors that go into your decision making?
Well, Father Time made that decision for me. I played as long as I could, played up until I was 38 years old. And but that last year, I knew it was time. I was draining my knee. My knee would swell. I drain it just so I can play that weekend. Then it swelled back up. So it was one of those deals where your body is saying that's enough. So during that transition time, it was now I got to make my connections. Now I gotta start making calls, which I should have been doing previously. When writing's on the wall. I was like, oh man, I gotta find out what I'm doing next.
Did you know you
So
wanted to coach?
I did.
Okay.
I felt like that was a natural transition for me. Because I love teaching the game. I love learning the game. And so I felt like that was my calling. So it was I made the calls and made, touched on some of those relationships. And started setting myself up for my post career, my post basketball, post playing career.
Absolutely. And I like that you touched on relationships. I'd written that down earlier because you had mentioned it before, even in high school, the relationships that you made. And then you talked about it in college and professionally. But you wanted to get into coaching. And so what happens is when you're getting away from playing, or if someone even that didn't play is trying to get into coaching, sometimes it's those relationships that you've established a long time ago. Maybe someone didn't have the stature that they have now, but treating people the right way consistently throughout your career enables you to have relationships and people that are willing to go to bat for you to have you come on to their staff or their program or their team. And so I think that's probably really important for you, just being able to treat people the right way for a long period of time. And obviously you had some great opportunities to coach. What does it look like for you from a coaching perspective to step in the shoes of a coach as opposed to being a player? And how has that changed and been different?
Well, it's actually a lot more time consuming as a coach. What as a player, what you didn't realize is, you go to practice, you put in that work, and then you go home. As a coach, you're preparing that practice schedule, then you of course have the practice. Then now you're watching film or you're preparing for the next practice, for the next game, or putting together schemes, relationships. If you have other players that you need to speak to about whatever life issues there could be, so there's coaching is much more time consuming than I had, previously known, so that was probably the biggest adjustment.
Yeah. And you've been around a lot of great coaches, but what are some of the characteristics and the values that the coaches you admire do best, and what are those things?
I'd have to say, with Coach Romar, his faith was probably the biggest thing that stood out for me. He actually played for Athletes in Action, which is a Christian-based basketball team that traveled around, and he instilled faith as a big part of his life, and helped us, helped us with that. Putting in the work as far as the time concerned, they all have families, but they spent more time with their teams than they did with their families. And it's the dedication. You have to, if you want to be the best, if you want to be really good at it, you're gonna have to put in the work and time. And similar to being a good athlete and a good player, if you want to be a good coach, you got to watch the film. You have to, prepare your notes. You have to prepare and be ready. And I think if you want to be successful, you have to set yourself up, for that success. And it doesn't come with, with talk. You have to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's a great point. And being able to have people, not just your parents and not just your teammates, but coaches around you that support you, that have dedication to you as a player, and spending that time, a lot of times your players are extension of your family because they are a part of seeing, you see them probably more than you see your family for the majority of the season of the year. So
Sure, for sure.
yeah. Well, real quickly, I want to get you out of here on time. Got a little fire round for you. So I'll say a sentence and you can finish with a word or sentence, however you feel led. You can do anything if.
You can do anything if you believe in yourself. If you believe in yourself, then you have an opportunity to do anything, but if your self-doubt can be the worst enemy.
Absolutely.
You can also do anything if your back is up against the wall. If you need to move forward and push yourself, then you'll find the necessary way. You'll find the means.
Absolutely. Resilience means.
Never settling. Pushing past your failures. Same.
Yeah. Favorite vacation spot?
Cabo.
Cabo. Okay.
Yeah, I love Cabo. I love Jamaica. Been to Jamaica 6 or 7 times.
Okay.
Been to Cabo maybe as many times. I used to live in Vegas. I don't anymore. So I have to say
Say
Vegas
Vegas.
is
Yeah.
now one of my favorite spots, because that's probably why I moved to Vegas, because I just loved it so much. But now that I don't live there, I can be a tourist again.
Absolutely. Yep. Those are great spots. Discipline means.
Discipline means, like sometimes giving up on something that makes you comfortable, pushing past your comfort zone. You have to, when you need, when you, when you're disciplined, you have to give up some things that might be easy or might be fun. You have to push past your comfort.
Absolutely. Well, we're done with the fire round. I typically do two questions. I've got three questions for you though. Because you touched on having a son and then going to Poland. And you touched on faith and that being important to you. How has your faith shaped you as not just a player, coach, but as a husband and father? And what do you think it means to be a great husband and father?
Giving up yourself, to be a great husband, being there for your partner, being there for whatever's necessary. If you're wrong, admit it. If you can support them in any way, do so. For your kids, there is, we call it, I call it being a daddy taxi. I'm taking the kids everywhere. I'm here for them, whatever they need. I actually saw recently, Tony Finau just won the Mexican Open golf championship this past weekend. And people are applauding him, because after he won the championship, he was the caddy for his two kids on a par three course later that day. And that's fatherhood. You know, that's what you do after a long, hard day at work. If you have time, you know, you make time after work and do stuff with your kids, you know. So it's about time and giving everything that you have to your relationship at home with your wife or husband, and giving all your time to your kids to help them in their upbringing.
Yeah, I love that, and I love the example you used. I hadn't heard that story yet, but that's a great example of being present, being a great father.
Absolutely.
So, is there a certain piece of best advice that you haven't already mentioned, and what would that be?
Best piece of advice. Believe in yourself. If no one else will, you have to believe in yourself, you know, and you have to learn from past mistakes, you know, and learn from them. Don't repeat them, obviously, you know. But self-confidence, you know, you just if you aren't self-confident, if you don't believe in yourself, then you know, then what do you have? You know, if you want to get hired by someone, then and you don't believe in yourself, then why do you think the employer is going to hire you? You know, so I think self-confidence and self-worth are key components.
Yeah, and like you touched on, it's all those little things that you do every single day that builds that self-confidence, so you're able to go on and have that. So I think that's a great point. Well, this podcast is called Building Excellence. What does building excellence mean to you?
Putting yourself around successful people. I think to build success, you need to learn from past mistakes and grow. I think learning from people who have achieved some of your goals, conversations, having good and bad conversations, you know. Healthy and uncomfortable conversations sometimes are necessary, you know, hopefully the people that you're talking to are building that are successful, or, you know, and you want to build towards that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's a great point. And surrounding yourself with people that hold you accountable, but also that you look up to because they are where you want to be, is really
Right.
important. And then just take the daily discipline, the daily action to get to that level. And
Yes.
that's how you do it. So yeah, I love the answer. Also, we didn't even get touched on it. I was watching a movie the other day with my wife, and I was like, man, I know that face. We
Oh
didn't even get to talk about you being a movie star. So
man, that's funny.
people can watch for themselves. So
Yeah.
Well,
Love
Chuck,
and basketball. How about that?
that's right. Love and Basketball, great movie. So, well, Chuck, thank you so much for coming on the show. Thanks for sharing your story and some of the lessons that you've learned throughout your story and what you're applying to the guys that you coach every single day and as a husband and father, being present. Those are all things that we need to do on a daily basis. So, thanks for being on the show.
I appreciate you having me, Bailey. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Building Excellence Podcast. If you found value today, we would really appreciate it if you shared the show and left a rating and review. Also, be sure to follow us on all podcasts and social platforms, as well as YouTube, where you can watch full video episodes. To learn more about the podcast or any coaching or speaking, check out baileymiles.com. Thanks again, and now go work to build excellence in your life, leadership, and legacy.